Well, first of all, you know, thank you for allowing us to come over this morning. And our purpose is not to really relive what the past has been, because there's a lot of things going on right now. And this is a total surprise to us that we have seen this headlines in your paper, not knowing that this was evidently going to be filed today. The details of which I think was, I don't know if any of you trustees even had an inkling of this, something like this. But our purpose really today was not to come here in the original purpose that we had when we were talking about the editorial that had come out from the Star Bulletin, but more looking forward on what we wanted to make sure that you guys understand what we're doing there. We have been rather quiet for this 1 year period, primarily because of first the hearing for the removals. Our attorneys have told us to stay out of the limelight, don't discuss the hearing, because there was too many things that could probably come against us if in fact we kind of spoke openly. The second part is that the Attorney General now is pursuing a surcharge on the former trustees, and that area, again, we can't talk about that because they're pressing forward on that issue. And many of the things that, or the information that we have to been subpoenaed by the Attorney General would be disclosed to them. And those kind of stuff I think we have to stay away from in discussions today. But what we wanted to do is kind of allow us to explain to you where we came from, what we're going to be doing, and then you can ask any questions you want to regarding that. We'll be glad to discuss those things. Because there are, well, many of the headliners, and I understand that good things never sell papers, but there are a lot of good things happening in the commitment school. And I can start from the top. Right now, let me just say two good things over here. We got the president of the school and the new CEO. Hamilton McCummin has come in through the commitment schools with tremendous credentials. I know that some people were concerned with us when we had selected an educator instead of an investment person, but being what we are a school, and being the education of our young children is a primary purpose of what the school is about. We strongly believe, all of the five trustees, that we have selected a person with leadership abilities, with management skills, and while he does not have the strongest investment type of experience, I never came into this job with a huge amount of investment experience, despite the fact that I ran $22 billion worth of program procurements for the Navy when I before I retired. I ran a total education and training facility for all of the Navy, including 159 training command training stations and nuclear power, flight training, the whole work. But I've learned a lot about investments in this process. You can't help but learn it. Investments and making some sound judgments. But I believe that the person that runs the school has to have a balance of impeccable credentials and great managerial skills and good decision-making talents, so that whatever decision is made, he considers all his experts, and that's who he has. He has a lot of experts below him. Michael Chun sitting at the president of the school. We have a new CIO in Wendell Brooks, and we have other people in the organization that support him. And we are transferring a lot of the responsibilities to Hamilton. We're in the process of weeding out the delegation, how we're going to delegate our duties that used to be with the former trustees, and we'd like to now put it onto the CEO and formalize that delegation so that whoever comes in behind us we'll know what these delegation duties are. And so there's a lot of things happening. We're opening a new school on 2nd June. We're going to be doing a groundbreaking in East Hawaii. And we're going to be starting a new school in East Hawaii from K-12. We already had a ribbon-cutting ceremony on August the 30th on Maui school campus. It's going to be K-8. It's a decision for a K-12 program. Has not been made by this trustees, and that was... the decision has not been made only because our staff, including Mike, has asked us to defer that decision until the ongoing strategic planning process is completed and we can look at all the pros and cons and all the inputs we've gotten to determine whether we do want to go from K to 12 on the Maui campus. And so we have honored that request from our people until about the end of June, Mike. I think that that's the date that we're looking for. We are currently looking at the final report in its draft form, which will be done by the end of this month, and then which will be taking it back to the stakeholders on all the other islands and restating what we have found in the strategic planning process. And we'll be submitting the strategic plan in its final approved form from the trustees by October, as ordered by the courts, in the stipulation that they would like to see a strategic plan by October. We're working with the IRS. As most of you know, their tax-exempt status has been preserved, conditioned on certain on our agreements. We have not resolved, however, the taxable side, and that one is near completion. We are basically working with the IRS on the agreement, the closing agreement on the taxable side. And we hope within the next couple of months that should be publicly disclosed, and the details of that should be out hopefully within the next month, but I'll guess maybe the next 2 months it should be out. But there's so much more, and I'm going to stop talking here, because I think each individual here today can give you a piece of what I've just said, and we'd like you to be free to ask us questions. We have been open, not only with everyone, except for the legal things that had to do with hearings and investigations and all these kind of stuff. We'd like to keep that one still under the lid, because there are significant implications for us to speak about it right now. But at this time, I'd like to turn it over to questions, but also refer to these individuals that we've made today, and so you can get more from not only from me, but from all of them.
Well, I'll be glad to talk about outreach. Mike is, last summer, Mike put together a program, which some of which has already gone into action. The rest will start this summer in the fall, the K-3 reading program of public schools. Very excited about that. That's going to, let's drop back a bit. We've had a series of speakers come into the school as part of the strategic planning. One of the speakers is a Pulitzer Prize winner, and spent his whole time talking about the infant. For example, are you aware, I wasn't, that a child of 6 months can gain some basic mathematical skills? Now, I never knew that. I know they know how to wet a diaper and things like that, but I wasn't aware of that particular point. The whole point being that from birth until around 4, 5, 6 years of age, you have a very key time in the life of a human critter. And we're trying to put more emphasis on the child there. Of course, we've got to keep an emphasis on Mike's K through 12 and the K through 12 that'll come about in Hawaii. But we're looking at more of an outreach toward partnerships with people, public school. In Waimanalo, we worked with the Department of Hawaiian Homelands and with the Lilio Kalani Trust. And we're building, jointly putting up a building there. And we'll also have a classroom for 3-year-olds and for 4-year-olds. We're looking for more of that sort of thing, where the community will realize that we need the help of everybody to reach out to Hawaiian children. We don't have $20 billion. We don't have $10 billion. And you can start going backwards and you still won't hit us where we are. I wish we did have $10 billion. That'd be very nice. We were told we did. We don't. So therefore, we have to look for more cooperation, more partnerships in the community to reach out to Hawaiian children. Right now, it looks as though that we can do a lot with the infant parent program, which Mike can tell you more about. That goes back to 92, 91, maybe, I don't know when. But that had great success, and of course it was cut off in 94 or 95.
That's a traveling preschool.
Well, that's one of them, but there was a parent incentive program that Reverend was talking about, was the one that we worked with the prenatal.
But we're excited about the outreach, and we're excited by the receptivity we're getting from various parts of the community. People are now beginning to say, well, they need help, we can help, let's join together and try to get some things done with children. Because I still say, if you're going to make a change in the state of Hawaii with those who don't have, you've got to do it first. Up to 5-6 years of age. Get that start, and you can do great things later on. If you don't have the start, you know full well you're fighting after that. You're going to bring in social agencies, you're going to bring in this, always to correct after something hasn't been established. So I hope to see in what life offers me in the future, not with the estate. I just hope to read the paper about more things happening at the estate of reaching out to those youngsters. I could easily entertain you for 4 hours on the subject. Education is something in which I'm keenly interested, but I think probably I've used up my time, so therefore I should subside into a state of radiant contentment and say hello to Bud.
Chief, you got anything you want to say?
No, I think I would prefer that they ask questions.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, see if you got a preamble before you start asking questions. Okay. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say one thing. That I think that what should be appreciated by the press and everybody else in the state of Hawaii here is it's not five trustees that are making this estate run. I mean, there are so many dedicated people in this estate that... Unfortunately, sometimes they look at the five trustees and say, wow, you guys are doing a great job, and that's kind of embarrassing because there are so many people. I mean, I am so impressed being in this estate to see the dedication that the people in this estate have, both at Kauai'a Plaza and on the Kapalani campus, people like Mike up there, and the whole staff. And
the other islands also.
Yeah, the other islands, and you get carried away seeing the enthusiasm that the people have now. I don't know what it was like before, but I think that if this estate, the progress that it is making, and it's made a lot of progress in the last year, at least in my opinion, a lot of things have been accomplished on the legal side with the revolution of the tax exempt status and the taxable problems that the estate has. They're very close to having all of those resolved, but the Hawaii campus is under construction plans are being made, curriculum's being studied there, the Maui campus is, as Bob said, we're waiting for a strategic plan, but at least it's under review, there's some outreach programs that have been started, financial investments that the estate makes are being reorganized, so we have a more traditional investment portfolio. There are a ton of things that are happening, and maybe the biggest one that impresses me is the strategic planning process that has more than 300 people at the estate are involved in this process, so there's a lot of input coming from people just within the Kamehameha schools. Plus, they're going out to the community. But the fact that these people give their time in excess of the time that they work, that they're putting in their own time to make this process work, that a lot of credit has got to go to the people in Kamehameha schools, not just the trustees. You kind of cut the rope and everybody's out there doing their thing, and it's a really great thing to see. So credit should be given to just everybody that's in this organization.
A big amen to that.
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, always read negative things that have happened in the past, and maybe that's appropriate, and I hope people appreciate what is happening now. The people in this estate are causing it to happen. Everybody in this estate, not just these trustees.
How many employees do you have now?
I think it's around 12 or 1300 right now. Yeah.
A lot.
Now,
could I just get Hamilton to say a few words and have Mike
so we get everybody in here, and then go ahead with your questions. Go ahead, Hammond.
Well, following the same theme, from the CEO's perspective, I've been looking for transformations or changes along three lines. One is the most important, the degree to which the trustees have moved forward with the CEO structure. And that involves primarily delegating responsibilities, ensuring that I'm held accountable for things moving forward, and that particularly that we revamp the way we operate so it's more inclusive, reflective of strategic planning, and cooperative with Dr. Chun and what his plans are on the go-forward basis. Second is to make sure that our investment efforts are focused in the right direction, particularly on passive investments, and that we have a good management structure and a CIO that's operating along some strategic plans in terms of spending policies and allocation policies. The third is really to reshape some of the odd things that have occurred within the organization that were created out of the old system, and working with the entire group so we're moving forward in a much more coordinated, planful fashion. I'd be glad to talk about the specifics, but on thinking on the forward, this is really an exciting time for the school. As I was presenting to the East Hawaii campus, that we're being exposed to the community exposed to the new campus, how it's going to look. They wanted to ask, as a matter of fact, they asked the question is, you know, some of the things that are appearing in the news are new news but old story. It's rehashing what was wrong and in more in a deeper sense. And as we told, the good things that are happening, and not just to praise Kamehameha and the trustees, but just on a looking to the forward, the people are really anxious to hear what is coming out of this mess and what good things are really happening that's going to benefit kids, Kamehameha kids, Hawaiian kids in the future. I'm excited about it. It's a good time.
Mike?
Looking around the room, I guess I'm the one who has perspectives from the old regime and the new one. And let me tell you, it's like this new job that I just got a year ago was fantastic. there's been a lot of things that have happened over the past year. I've never been busier in the 12 years that I've been president of the Kamehameha School. I'd like to say something about the board, our board. In a word, they have been outstanding in terms of providing leadership. There are three things. I'm getting to be like Pam, enumerating things. You know. There are three things that really pop up in my mind. Number one is that they've opened up communications within the institution and outside the institution, and they have honored professionalism, the expertise that we have within the institution. They've demonstrated not only in words but in actions they've taken, not only an appreciation but also a sense of value and honor to the wonderful expertise that we have on that hill. I was just thinking, a couple more weeks ago, we'll look back at the past school year and say, what have we accomplished? And I say, to start with, we will have graduated 450 plus students. We're going on to great things. We'll have finished 1 year of work with about 1,000 4-year-olds, getting them ready for kindergarten. We will have completed, undergraduate education in terms of our elementary programs and the secondary programs. We will have the other evening we're at the house and we're congratulating at that particular event 100-200 graduates of different universities in state and out of state degrees from AA degrees all the way up to doctorate degrees through our post high program. So you look at that and say, my gosh, once again we have accomplished as an institution, and it's taken tremendous expertise, dedicated members of the faculty, of the staff, and for the very first time you know, our leadership within the institutions recognizing that and honoring that. So that's one. I think secondly, governance. You know, setting up the governance structure this past year has been no easy task. It's been very difficult having to deal with changing conditions as we, you know, as when the closing agreements and the master's reports were crafted. At the time, there was a, you know, the environment was, the landscape was entirely different than it was, say, 6 months later after they came aboard. And so, you know, having to deal with the courts in crafting and designing the governance system that would really work. And I can say that that has been a major accomplishment, and it is working. It's been, Hamilton has been providing wonderful leadership, inspired leadership for all of us, and really allowing us to take care of business the way we believe business should be taken care of. And then the third accomplishment, it's an ongoing one at this point in time, is the strategic plan. The strategic plan is going to be a case study in terms of how, if you have the resources within an organization, how strategic planning ought to be done. It has been grassroots. It has, you know, it's been involved stakeholders throughout Hawaii as well as on the mainland, including and everything. It's invited a lot of expertise, a lot of external thinking about education, about economics, about everything that we're about the Kamehameha Schools is all about. And so, you know, I think that has been, we're very, very excited. We're at the point of putting it out back into the community for discussion and response. And we're very excited. I guess in closing, I can say that, you know, I've been here for 12 years. I've been here in the darkest times of Kamehameha's history. I really believe that. This past, from 1995 to 1998, probably 1999, probably the darkest times in our history. And I can say that there's been never a better time to be at Kamehameha.
Some charitable trusts, Weinberg Foundation, for example, are required by the IRS, I think, to distribute 5% of their assets every year. I understand that doesn't apply to you, but if it did apply to you, and you had $6 billion in assets, that would be, you would have to put $300 million a year into education. Do you have any hope of doing that?
But we have already instituted a spending policy that describes what you have just stated. But our spending policy, because we are not, we are a charitable trust rather than a corporation, we are not bounded by the 5%. However, our target is between 2.5% to 6%. And we know we're going to be coming, you know, some years you got lean years as far as revenues, and some years you have good years. And so our spending policy, which we'd be glad to give you a copy of that so you can look at it, allows us to spend between, but the target of our spending would be 4%. That's where we're targeting. But it allows us to vary between 2.5% to 6%, with an average over 5 years of about 4%.
That would be $240 million,
right?
Which is a higher than you ever spent, I think.
That's correct.
Do you have plans to spend it?
Yes, we do.
Oh,
and that's
East Hawaii is built.
More.
Keep
your planning process is all about.
Yeah.
When we reach out at East Hawaii and other programs, K through 3 of the public schools, etc., which means hiring teachers, our operational expense fund is going to go up considerably. I'm glad we've got the money to pay for it.
Well, to get that money, you're changing your investment philosophy and policy and whatever. Could you amplify on that, the kind of changes you're making and where you've been, or where it was and where it will be?
Why don't one of you guys do that?
Because let me start, and then and Ron, you can follow. But one of the things that we realized, first of all, we had an internal staff that was handling our investments, and those people are great people. Don't get me wrong, but there are people out there that are experts in handling stocks, bonds, and all those things. And so what we have adopted is a policy of external managers. And we have gone and we have now taken, what, six different managers now, right?
Seven
managers to handle those investments, because they can, they're the experts, they can handle this thing on a daily basis, on a minute-to-minute basis. And so we have moved our asset allocation towards them. Now, one of the things that when I mentioned asset allocation, our opinion was we're severely imbalanced as far as how we should be distributing our investments out there. As most of you know, Goldman Sachs has got a huge spike of our money. I mean, if something happens to Goldman Sachs, there it goes. I mean, but it has been really lucky for us that Goldman has been making a lot of money. But if they weren't making any money, I think we'd be in deep kimchi right now on some of those things. So we will be moving those kind of monies around. And rather than investing, you know, $1.5 to $2 billion in just one company, we're going to now diversify. We're starting to move in that direction. It just can't happen overnight. We have advisors telling us how we will be doing, migrating these assets to a more diversified portfolio.
You want to add to that?
I don't know as much I can add, but I think, generally speaking, everybody knows, the Kamehameha Schools owns a lot of property in the state of Hawaii, and a lot of income comes from the commercial property that we have here, and that's property that the estate, for various reasons, would like to retain as sort of the core property that came to the estate from East Hawaii Bishop. But I think the big change is coming, as Bob said, we're moving from maybe the type of investments that were being made before, which you might describe as more speculative type, non-liquid investments, and we're transitioning those investments into more traditional investments that are more suitable for a organization like Kamehameha Schools, a tax-free charitable trust. And that primarily is stocks and bonds and things like that that are more liquid. And I think you would find in more institutions like ours throughout the country. But we are going to have less than 50% of our assets are in real estate, and a lot of that is in Hawaii, and that probably would remain. But that generates steady flow of income, what you need, because, as you know, the stock market bounces around a little bit. So I think that's where we're going, to a more balanced portfolio with less speculative type investments.
And we're getting out of residential leasehold debt fund? Is that being contemplated in this form?
Well, we've always, I think, been, I think the estate, long before we ever got there, was forced out of residential leasehold, which you know, we understand. And I think we're in the process of trying to get out, you know, trying to resolve the residential leasehold situation by selling the residential leaseholds. There are a lot of residential leaseholds, so it's difficult. It's not something you can do overnight or even in 1 year.
Are you saying that the investment decisions will not be made by the trustees in the future, that your advisors will be delegating that to your advisors, or will the trustees retain decisions?
I'm not sure I'm the one to answer all these questions, but no, I don't think we're saying that. I think that when you get into investments in equities like stocks, bonds, and all that, we are looking for, and we have a professional advisor that advises us how to allocate those investments, and also searches out the best managers in different areas like large cap stocks, small cap stocks, venture capitals, and things like that, and fixed income. And we have interviewed a lot of those people, and we have selected, as Bob said, seven managers in those different investment areas. And they will be another company that services a lot of the major educational institutions around the country, kind of supervises that. But we're not necessarily, we also have in-house staff that also look over these things. But once we select the managers, yes, they probably buy and sell within their allocated area, which say large cap stocks, they would have the authority to buy and sell within that range. But the allocation to large caps would stay the same, a certain percent. well as small caps, as well as fixed income and things like that.
But those are the decisions the board makes.
The board makes those decisions, and they have been made, and that's part of the investment policy that I'm talking about.
I think the difference we find now is that it's coming back and the whole board makes a decision. It's not one or two people making the decision at this point. So, what has happened in the past?
One item I think is good right now, but eventually it may come to light. A large portion of our investments are with Goldman Sachs. I think all of you realize the big involvement in that. We do want to diversify the amount that we have in there. Every time it goes down just 1 point, we're losing $22 million. Okay, and I think if you know, if you go back a couple months ago, it was up, I guess just about 100. Today it's back down to 80-some-odd points, so you can imagine how much it's lost. However, the problem is that we're stuck because of the agreement that was made when we got involved with Goldman Sachs. We can only sell so much, and we're restricted to selling anymore. And right now, we do want to, several months ago, we did want to sell, but we couldn't sell.
What was the constraints on selling? Price, or is it?
No.
Yeah, as a members, we did count a percent a year.
Okay.
When Goldman Sachs was converted, when the limited partnership interest was converted to a stock interest.
So they restricted to the office.
Because, because maybe a school held 10% of Goldman Sachs, and there was another company that held more than that. There were limitations on how much you could sell every year because they didn't want all of that stock to be pent on the market at one time. So there's a 5-year period which you can sell 20% for a year.
It's just not a stock price. You get a dividend out of that as well, and it's pretty steady income as well.
Yeah, when it was a limited partnership, you got all of the income as a stock. You get whatever the dividends are, which are substantially less, but of course the stock has not done too badly recently. As Francis said, it's gone up and down a little bit. Makes you a little nervous, but
we've got some letters to the editor about the interim trustees on two extremes. On the one hand, we have the feeling that why are the interim trustees making such big decisions like picking the chief CEO, why is this process for picking the permanent trustees taking so long? And on the other hand, we have letters saying, why aren't the interim trustees doing more? Why aren't they getting rid of some of these counsel that gave bad advice? There's a conflict of interest. Why aren't you offsetting this six-figure pension being paid to Henry Peters? So could you talk about what you see as your role as interim trustees? And is there any kind of conflict in the fact that some of you have applied for the permanent trustees position?
Let me talk about the CEO, the first part that you had mentioned. First of all, we were constrained. When I say constrained, we were directed by court order to implement a CEO-based management system. Then, with that court order, the IRS saw that court order and made that a condition that we will implement that thing, and as part of keeping our tax exempt status. And so in fact, there was a lot of phone calls to me frequently by the master, when are you going to be selecting the CEO, and when are you going to be doing this thing? And so it was something that we knew we had an end date, because the former trustees, as you recall, in the original order from the court, had 180 days to implement it and select the CEO. And that expired, I think, at some time in March of 1999. We became the trustees on May 7th. And that was part of the removal, of the temporary removal of the former trustees, because they were in breach of the court for not implementing the CEO management system. So when we went into saddle, all of a sudden we were riding a 180-day limit on this thing. So there were some direction that we do this. The governance policy had to be written before we can even, it had to be approved by the courts before we can even hire a CEO. And that was another direction from the court. Get that governance policy in. We have to approve it, and then we expect you guys to do the hiring the CEO. So there was a, you know, well, Kawaiʻahau Plaza out there looked like the stream, the top of the stream was really calm. Internally, we were just turning and burning and doing a lot of things because it wasn't a very simple process. You're looking at four here, but there's a fifth one, too, of different opinions. And to me, that was really great because I didn't want a board that everybody said yes and we just marched down. I mean, we were in a boardroom and we argued. We never fought. We argued our opinions. But we walked. Well, that's a matter of opinion. But when we walked out of the door, we all honored the majority's decision and we marched with that. So from that point of view, you've got to understand what's happening there. And a lot of people don't understand this. What we are constrained by time to get to a certain period. The other part of why we do, you know, why did we just clean house and all these things here? You know, you read it. We gave you our what you call letter to the editor, and I think it speaks for itself. But the thing is, I don't know how many of you can walk in an organization, don't know anybody in an organization, and start firing everybody in the organization. I mean, how do you do that? I've never done that in my life, and I don't think I'll ever do it again up to that point. I think you have to be fair to every individual. That when you come there, you've got to know them, you've got to start to understand the organization. So I think there's a lot of people criticizing us, and I can understand them because they were right in the trenches when all this was happening, and they have a lot of emotion for this. But I think we, the five trustees, have been trying to make sure that we don't get rolling that mud with them. We keep ourselves by the be very honest, be very fair to our people, and as we progress, and we do find, and your articles like this kind of help us. We always read these things, and we go back and ask the AG, could I get a report of this so we can take a look at it? And if we find something, we'll do it properly. If it requires disciplinary action or removal or whatever that, you know, that's what we intend. All of the things we're doing is not doing internally. We're using outside because we don't want any kind of tarnish later on that says, well, you got an internal guy investigating another internal guy. And both these guys were there before, so that whole investigation is tainted. We're not doing that.
But do you see any possible conflict in the
Let me just say something about this. First of all, and I think this is to the credit of the individuals who decided to ask us to become trustees. Till today, I don't know who made that decision. I didn't know any of these people. When we were each asked to serve the court and to help Kamehameha School, we accepted it. Now, we didn't apply for the job. So we had no agenda whatsoever. I had nothing to gain because they never even asked us, told us we were going to get paid. The only thing they told me personally is that I would have to give 2 days a week for probably 3 months. So I accepted. Yeah. But like I say, we meet, we argue, we fight. But keep in mind, we have no agenda. When people apply for a job, they have a purpose. They may want the money. They may be interested in that type of profession, whatever. We were just asked, and we accepted.
But Chief, do you see any conflict in the fact that you're applying for the permanent position?
I said I'm applying.
Well,
I'm telling you right now. Listen, you know,
I did not apply.
I'm not asking
what,
about the
did
other.
Anyone apply for the permanent position?
I don't know. If you ask me, I don't know. See, so what I am saying.
But is there any, in your opinion, is there any conflict with you setting, for example, the salaries of the permanent trustees?
Why we don't set the salaries. You know, we don't set the salaries.
Let me just say this much, okay? Let me say this much.
You already know that. Excuse me.
You know, I've gone on publicly, and I'm sure you guys have heard me talk to the alumni. Every time I talk to alumni, they say, Bob, are you going to put in an application or a trustee. My response to him was, I will not put in an application for trustee, but however, if I get nominated for the position and there is enough support, then I will fill in whatever requirements to fulfill that thing, okay? This board unanimously have been nominated by outside sources to be candidates, okay? And let me just leave it at that.
But one thing you should understand from the questions you asked is that the trustees here have nothing to do, number one, with what compensation the future trustees get. The court appointed a commissioner to study that. They had professional people study it, and they came back with recommendations to the court. We were not in that process, so we had nothing to do with that. The same is true of the trustee selection process. We have nothing to do with that. We don't make those selections. We don't nominate people. We don't do anything. So, I mean, if that's the conflict you might be alluding to, that doesn't exist because we have been removed, thank goodness, from that process.
Let me follow up. I mean, today I wrote a story for the newspaper regarding the role of attorneys under the Crass regime. I know you folks haven't read the report yet or haven't been, I don't know if you've read the story yet, but is there a general response as to if you were to find some sort of waste of trust assets by former trustees and their attorneys, would you seek to have the former trustees repay the estate, or is there any action pending regarding that, surcharging former trustees?
Probably four answers to that question.
Well, I want to be careful how I answer that, because there is a surcharge action that is pending in the courts right now. So I don't want to comment too much on that, but some of the things that may be contained in your article may be a part of that surcharge action. We are not parties to the surcharge action. Commandia schools, when I say we. So if you're saying, what if something else comes up that we didn't know about? The only way I can answer that generally is that I think this board here, including myself, is going to do what we think is right for the estate and not be influenced by a lot of outside sources that might cause us to do something we don't think is right. We're going to do what we think our fiduciary duty requires us to do, and that might not always be the popular perception of what ought to be done, because, you know, you read a lot of things and rumors get started and they come around the circuit. By the time they go around the circuit, they've gotten all out of proportion to what the problem was in the first place. And I've had people talk to me about things.
Is there a general response as to some of the highlights of the master's report that's to be filed today regarding the lawyers' roles during the controversy?
I have not seen the master's report. In fact, on the way over here, it's the first time I saw your article here. So,
you can't comment on it now?
Well, for several reasons. Number one, there is a pending legal action. And secondly, I haven't read it and I don't know the specifics of what you're talking about.
One of the issues that came up was the will stipulates that a report be made annually in the newspaper to the public. Do you plan to do that, and when, and what kind of things would you expect?
Come back, and that's interesting, because I just asked that question again, and I haven't done that. We'll be following up, because that is one thing that we do want to do as soon as possible. We just now have just filed our tax return, and now we have all of the numbers there. And so my only direction to Hamilton is it fulfills all of the requirements of the will.
And the answer will be yes. It is complete a form that's possible.
And what would you expect to be in there? Both a financial report, a balance sheet kind of thing, or more of a...
Yes. There will be several different, obviously, as large organization, all one piece of paper. I think the intention is to provide us, we do with the tax, we'll give you an idea, that will be released, all the programs and their review will be released, all the different financial activities will be released. I think as it will intended was to inform the public essentially what's going on with the trust and the space.
Would you expect there to be some surprises in there for the public?
Not if we're doing our job. I think you provide us more surprises.
Well, the one thing that I think I just wanted to caveat that is that this report brings us up to the end of June of 1999. So, you know, it's nothing that we need. Yeah. If there are things in there, we couldn't have controlled that part. But certainly we'll take full responsibility for everything from May 7th of 1999.
Just a side comment. The question you were asking about the trustees and their interest in future roles. It'd be nice if another question was asked, and that is, for the benefit of the kids and for the benefit of the estate, is there a value to keep some continuity of the interim trustee so that the strategic plan that's been laid out has some continuity to it, rather than the question of should we ought to clean house automatically? It'd be nice if all different perspectives were considered. Because many would argue we need some transition time, because the trustees have done an exemplary job in terms of setting the foundation, the communication climate. I think it's important from the CEO's position, I know the president's position, that we would like some continuity. So we're hopeful that there'll be some continuity, but then it gets the wisdom of the courts.
I'd probably like to comment on their reaction to the 60 Minutes report.
Yeah, I'd like to say never will I ever face a media person for an hour knowing that they're going to report on 2 minutes because I can take every grammatical slip and put it in there. Catch me with my mouth wide open drooling. So I can say that.
This is my personal bias, okay, the whole time. Because Ostender is a personal friend of mine, I thought he did a magnificent job in this whole thing, but in the 60-minute thing, he was painted with the same brush as the rest of them, which kind of, I was a little disappointed in that. That's the part I was disappointed in.
The problem I see is what I alluded to first when I said something first, that all this negative publicity about the estate, it reflects on the people that are there today, who are the backbone of this estate, who are totally dedicated to this estate, and who have worked hard and are working hard now. And it's unfortunate that, and I realize that you have to report the facts, but you know, it was trustees and not the estate. There are so many good people in this estate with so much talent that just want to get in there and do the right thing and carry on with the mission of this school, and they are doing it now. And it's unfortunate that the negative publicity kind of splashes over on them a little bit, because it isn't the way it should be. And it also gives the kids up there that are going to school, you know, they're always reading the negative things. They don't know all of the things that we're talking about here today that have been accomplished. I mean, going to school, but they pick up the newspaper, whoops, there's another bad story about the making of schools. And that's the kind of thing 60 Minutes does the same thing. And you know, I like Bob said, I guess good news is not what people want to read. They want to read about the problems. I think the newspaper's done a terrific job in you know, what happened at the Michigan State. Certainly the news had a lot to do. The newspaper had a lot to do with what happened here.
Well, that's came out in 60 Minutes. Yeah. They didn't say a word about outreach.
I've got two points. One, I think it's sort of like South Africa with a new regime in there, and as much as you want to push forward, there was so much secretiveness going on to the point where several years they wouldn't even disclose the salaries of the trustees, and it's been a battle to get information. I think there's a natural curiosity to bring out the stuff that we didn't know, and the process is going to go on whether you want it to or not. It's just, it's all almost like the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in a way. But the other point was, in the 60 Minutes thing, Henry Peters said his main regret was not buying the Star Wars.
We're not going to buy it.
Any interest
at
all?
Shameless.
You know, let me go back to your first point. You know, one of the things that you got to understand, we're here to tell you what we're going to do in going forward. It's always a shock to any organization when you change the whole governance system and you try to institute certain programs. I've been through it many times. I've been through Tailhook. I've been through the Iowa, you know, explosion and all the whole kind of stuff. But the staff is going through that same process right now. I know that everybody is still waiting to settle down. I think the board, I think they collectively, we don't see ourselves settling down for maybe another year because there's a lot of things that are going to come to play. The CEO is going to have to do some reorganization structure. He's still trying to learn who the talents are in the organization and so on. So our requirements are going to be determined by the strategic plan that Mike's working with now. You know, how much or how little we're going to be doing in certain areas. So the staff is in a concern mode right now, and they're in this concern mode that while we are expounding open communications and all of that, it's got to permeate all the way down the organization. When it gets down to the last man in the organization, then I think we can walk away and say, okay, we're there. But it doesn't go overnight. It goes over a period of time. People are looking at the leaders and say, yeah, I've heard that before, you know, but show me. Tell me this thing is going to happen. So we are committed to that, and I know Mike and Hamilton is committed to that, but we're going to try to do the best and as fast we can do this, because once we get the organization believing in themselves, believing in a leadership that they're going to be supported, then I think you're going to see community emerge really to its full potential. Not until we get there, I think you're going to see the potential really come out.
Almost 11.
Oh, I'm sorry, but yeah, we have to go back to another meeting, unfortunately. But we seem to go from one meeting to the next, and that's our life over there.
But it's not with 69, for which we praise God daily.
Let me say something about 60 Minutes. I didn't watch it. I didn't know it.
I have a tape if you'd like.
Well, I want to thank all of you for listening to us, and we just wanted to tell our story, and I appreciate for you to take the time off and meet us, okay?
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.